When I was about 11 years old, a pair of kittens came to join our family. You were wondering why there were cats on the cover of your order of service. So the kittens careened around our small house like rubber super balls and discovered places to hide that we did not know existed. They found ways to scale the summits of the refrigerator and the bookcase, no matter how we tried to remove their footholds for climbing. And these kittens were escape artists. If they got into a room where they weren't supposed to go, it was extremely difficult to chase them down and retrieve them. If they were hiding, the three of us kids would thunder all over the house looking for them, reaching our arms as far as they would go behind furniture and under cabinets. We tried calling their names to get them to come to us. We tried meowing loudly, and neither speed nor force nor noises were effective at redirecting the kittens. What seemed to work, at least sometimes, was doing nothing. If one person sat calmly and alone in the center of the room where we suspected they were, the cats might emerge. And it had to be the sort of situation where they would saunter out and just happen to discover the quiet person along the path where they were planning to go anyway. Mindfulness is like gathering kittens in some ways, especially if we imagine that the kittens represent wandering parts of ourselves. Practices like meditation give us a chance to be fully present, to notice the movements of our mind and heart without needing to chase and entrap every stray part of ourselves. When we're fully present, we can be gentle and compassionate with ourselves, including those parts of ourselves that fear discovery. Most of us are as adept as kittens at running in circles and hiding from the realities that we don't want to face. I know I am. Most of the time, I wander around with a whole pride of kittens tangling balls of yarn together in my head. I don't mind admitting this to you because I suspect a lot of us are in the same boat. We're in the same cat tree, as it were. Anybody else in that cat tree? Yes? Little kittens? Yes, okay. So mindfulness is challenging, and increasing mindfulness is possible. None of us can be fully present all the time. I'm not looking for superheroes of mindfulness here. Yet we can return to our center every so often with the invitation to be here now. Be here now. It sounds simple, but simple is different from easy. We're all muddling into the present together, and there's a few ideas and practices that I think can help us. So let's cultivate awareness about the time and the space and the existence on our minds. This morning, we're going to notice when we are and where we are and how we are. Be here now. Be here. Be. So let's begin with now. The present moment is a difficult place to dwell. Worries tug our thoughts into the future or the past. Anticipating obstacles can help us overcome them, but there's a space between being totally unprepared, not thinking about the future at all, and spending our days perseverating on potential disasters. Right? Perseverating, getting stuck on potential disasters. And it all comes down to the role of fear. Fear of illness, fear of suffering, fear of embarrassment, fear of losing loved ones, fear of death. Fear often has a kernel of wisdom, but it needs a proportional reality check to be useful. And we need to have the ability to sit with that discomfort for a while as we do that reality check. In her book, When Things Fall Apart, Pema Chodron writes that learning to pause for a moment to consider the current experience before acting on an impulsive reaction to fear disrupts the chain reaction that turns small issues into big ones. I think part of what makes that chain reaction work is our human gift of making inferences, right? And we need to be able to make inferences. That's a great thing that our brain can do. We need to be able to make educated guesses about what might happen based on our observations. If a car is approaching the intersection and not slowing down, I'm going to form a hypothesis that the car will blow through that stop sign and I should stay on the sidewalk. The trouble is sometimes we guess wrong. And the longer we operate on a mistaken assumption, the harder it is to uproot. Those incorrect hypotheses can keep us running around in circles, afraid of risks that are either less likely or not as damaging as we predicted. So when our minds are a messy knot of worries twisted together by anxious brain kittens, one of the ways we can untangle the mess is to carefully separate the observation threads from the inference threads. Does that make sense? So the observation threads, stop and take inventory of what you can see, hear, feel, smell, and taste. Think to yourself about what you are observing. Even if you're not currently eating something, you may have the taste of what you last ate or your toothpaste in your mouth. Identifying your sensory input and your leaps of inference can make room for doubting some of the fears and worries that occupy your mind. Once we're centered in the now moment, we can respond rather than react, even if we're still afraid. We can feel fear without giving it control. Right? The fear might be telling you something useful, but that doesn't mean it has to be in the driver's seat. Buddhist literature is full of stories about meditation masters facing dangers, like aggressive dogs and poisonous snakes and hungry tigers, maintaining their equanimity thanks to long years of practicing mindfulness. And I don't know that most of us will get to that point, but we can begin by practicing sitting with others and confronting something together that is deeply uncomfortable, vital that we address, but not likely to actually harm us by exploring. The Racial Justice Task Force is organizing study circles. In this program, facilitators will create a safe space for participants from diverse backgrounds to have uncomfortable conversations about race, inequity, and white supremacy issues that have impacted Unitarian Universalism as a whole and this congregation in its own way. There's an insert in your order of service with announcement that has details, but what I want to get at is that talking about race is a fabulous opportunity to practice mindfulness. White supremacy culture is designed to defend itself with distractions and anxieties that prevent us from being fully present and aware of our thoughts and attitudes and open up to experiencing what is actually happening, right? So dismantling white supremacy is a spiritual practice. I'm grateful to the Racial Justice Task Force for presenting this opportunity for spiritual practice rooted in UU values. So whatever you're confronting, mindfulness and the honesty it requires might bring us face to face with the possibility of a career failure, personal failings, unpopular beliefs, or an inconvenient calling to justice. And we can let fears about those things dominate our thoughts, or we can bring ourselves back to this very moment, make our observations, and respond with integrity. Be here now. Now, being here is another challenge, especially if we're hoping to get somewhere in life or to move on from something unpleasant. Being here now also carries the risk of experiencing emotions that we're not done processing. And we humans are capable of feeling intense anger and despair and grief and regret. Even feelings of joy can be too overwhelming to handle all at once. It's okay to accept those feelings as they come and to let them go when they go. Grief does not get brushed out of us, never to grow back. Anger might retract its claws for a time, but the sharpness is still there. Complex emotional experiences take time and attention. They follow their own rules and their own timeline. And we do the best we can to balance putting energy into coping with putting energy into our functional, feed-the-family, everyday lives. Sometimes we have to compartmentalize. We have to put the despair in a basket and carry it along with us while we're running errands. Let the joy curl up around our feet while looking very seriously into the camera for our video conference call. Ignore the anger twitching its tail as we write a very polite note. You know what I'm talking about. Right? So sometimes we have to put those feelings in their own container and come back to them. The key is to come back and reconnect with the experience of living, messy emotions and all. Returning to coping is hard because feelings are exhausting and untidy. We might feel that once in the grasp of an intense emotion, we will never be able to rise again. And perhaps we're ashamed of feeling the way we do. So maybe we do something else to fill the space or transport us elsewhere, rather than making ourselves vulnerable to the sensory and emotional experience we're having right here. This is where retail therapy comes in, or escapist entertainment, or alcohol abuse, or risky behavior. Lots of activities that are harmless or even beneficial in most circumstances can become escapes from living in the here and now. And that's when we start to miss the signs that our choices have negative consequences. When I'm tempted to be anywhere but here, one kind of practice that helps me return to my center is paying attention to my senses during routine activities. A blessing or a song or a breath as I unlock my door or prepare my tea is a moment to say, this is where I am and what I'm doing right now. This life is a blessing. Thich Nhat Hanh writes about a set of practices in Vietnamese Buddhism. Meditative practice phrases he learned as a novice included things like, washing my hands, I hope that every person will have pure hands to receive reality. Right? Little things that you do throughout the day, a ritual that brings you back to the moment. Mindfulness rituals give the signal to be here now. These reminders invite us to take a break from our escape strategies, which may be causing harm to us or our loved ones unintentionally. This very moment right here and right now has its perils. There is so much beauty, rage, and overwhelming life. Avoidance is understandable. On days when we're able, refraining from that avoidance is a blessing. Be here. Pema Chodron writes that she gets many letters from people who lack self-compassion. Actually, how she put it is, I get many letters from the worst person in the world. She goes on, the people who give themselves such a hard time come in all ages, shapes, and colors. The thing they have in common is that they have no loving kindness for themselves. And she continues and says that self-awareness, knowing ourselves and our patterns in the context of unconditional friendship and acceptance, is a form of maitri. That's a Sanskrit word that often gets translated as loving kindness. Maitri entails non-harming in thinking and speech and actions. In Buddhism, maitri applies to all beings, others and the self, to the extent that such a division exists. But compassion for the self is the hard part for many people. Pema Chodron points out that internal maitri is essential if we're going to be honest with ourselves and survive. Mindfulness clarifies the truth, and the truth is that we are all flawed. Comfort with our flaws makes mindfulness bearable. Furthermore, we can't give away what we don't have. Compassion for others is tied to acceptance of the tangled up truth within. We don't have to be perfect. In fact, trying to be perfect might lead to the shortcut of trying to appear to be perfect and hoping that reality catches up. You've been there too, I have. Maintaining that illusion takes so much energy that a person could miss out on the beauty of this world and the sweetness of friendship. So this is starting to sound like universalism. In our tradition, the spirit of life does not ask us to pass a test before we are accepted and loved and treasured as part of this sparkling, interdependent web of life. A universalist experiences that unconditional love and responds by returning it to the world through justice and compassion. Our mission is an expression of gratitude. We don't have to earn our merit. We can simply be and know that we dwell in the heart of the spirit of life. As Unitarian Universalists, we do look for ways to grow into being the people we are becoming. The people we are right now are also beloved creatures of worth. The people we are right now are beloved creatures of worth. Our lives right now have value. We can be witnesses for love without delay. Waiting for or imitating perfection would keep us from being here now, fully alive and engaged in this shifting, miraculous, messed up, and glorious world. As we practice returning to mindfulness again and again, let us be gentle with ourselves and with each other. Let us sit quietly and lovingly with the mind kittens and the tangled yarns of our emotions and sensations and inferences and reactions. Let us respect our fears without giving them control. Let us attend to the here and now when we can. Let us remember that we are beautifully imperfect. Be here now. So be it. Blessed be. Amen.